What if I told you weight loss is not about willpower, cutting carbs, or working harder in the gym, but instead comes down to flipping a specific switch in your body, one that helps flush out unnecessary calories? Heart surgeon and nutrition expert Dr. Stephen Gundry is revealing a new, simple, but insanely effective way to help get a slim, energized, and healthy body with no deprivation, restrictions, or fads. MCT Wellness can help you flip that switch yourself from the comfort of your own home. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. All you do is add a scoop to water and enjoy. Help unlock your body's potential by going to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Hello, welcome everyone. It is FMC. I am Jeremy. That is SP3. It is Tuesday, October 29th, and the first week of the NBA season is in the books. We're going to talk about all of that here today. We're going to talk about the wedding episode of Love is Blind, where we only had two couples make it down the aisle. This was the most failed season I think we've ever had in Love is Blind history. We're going to be joined by our pal Cher Delaware later on to talk about that. And we're going to talk about the challenge where Johnny Bananas is a salty little biatch. Hopefully that doesn't get us demonetized. I didn't quite say it.
You said the abbreviation.
Oh, it is October 29th. It's Tuesday, SP3. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing well to talk about some NBA basketball and some trash reality when it comes to NBA basketball. Hate to say I told y'all so, but I did tell y'all so last week. I said the week after we did our preview, and I was all kind of depressed. I was kind of monotone when it came to my Los Angeles Lakers. I was like, yeah, an AC at best. Then I watched some tape. I went back to the tapes. I watched it over from the preseason. And I was like, you know what? The Los Angeles Lakers are going to be a lot better than what I thought they were. They are not who I thought they were. I knew that my man, J.J. Redick, a.k.a. Coach of the Year, through four games. Coach of the Year, J.J. Redick, he was going to turn this team around. And I've been seeing all over my YouTube feed, oh, the Lakers are so much better than they would have. Oh, J.J. Redick is doing a coaching masterclass, all this type of stuff. But all they had to do was watch FMC, and they would have known what was about to happen this past week.
Guys, leave a thumbs up on the video. Leave a super chat. Get your question, comment, statement right on the air. Subscribe to the channel if you have not already. We are here every Tuesday talking basketball and trash reality television, and we do other stuff on this channel, allegedly wrestling, but who could possibly care about all of that? But then the Lakers have been impressive to start the season. I know they lost last night to the Suns, but it was a tough game against a good Phoenix team. Well, they've looked good as well through the first few games. Like they had a 28-point lead against the Lakers on Friday night, and then they blew it in the second half. The Suns are still kind of figuring things out with Budenholzer, but overall they're better than they are last year. Neither of these teams changed all that much as far as personnel. What they changed was their coaching, and they actually got some competent coaches in there. J.J. Redick has been impressive. We knew J.J. Redick was smart. I never had a question about like, oh, does J.J. Redick know what he's doing? Yeah, I knew J.J. Redick from a scheme perspective, knew what he was doing. It was going to be from a management perspective, from an ego perspective, was J.J. Redick going to be able to get things under control? And was he going to be able to kind of navigate those waters as an NBA coach? Through four games, he's good. It's four games. I don't like making hot take assertions through four games, although that's what we're going to do here for the next
That's what we're asked to do. We're asked to do, give hot takes about the week that was. And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, folks, we've made it through 4 minutes. So I'll give the long buildup for this. But we are back, baby. The Laker Church is back. Ring the bell. Let's freaking go. Let's go. Laker Church is back in section. And this is your pastor, SP3, in the place to be. And I want to teach y'all a lesson. Teach y'all a lesson that sometimes in life, no matter how much you love your brothers and sisters, no matter how much you want to see the best in your brothers and sisters, you have to rebuke some people from your life. And that's what my Los Angeles Lakers, our Los Angeles Lakers, had to do. They had to rebuke Darvin Ham up out of here. I wanted to see the best in my brother. I wanted to see the best in Darvin Ham. I wanted to see myself in Darvin Ham. But Darvin Ham, he couldn't just handle the pressure. And sometimes you have to rebuke people who can't handle the pressures of life because they're succumbed to their addiction to incompetence. And we can't let these people who are thriving on incompetence drive us down. Darvin Ham overachieved in 2023. He overachieved. The Los Angeles Lakers got to the conference finals. And we were all looking for the best in Darvin Ham. Rob Pelinka gave the brother all the gifts in the last offseason. He was like, I want to see you thrive, my brother. Be competent. Don't thrive in incompetence. You overachieve. So he put him on the best path possible for success. But you know what Darvin said? He said, no, some people succumbs to drugs and alcohol. He succumbed to incompetence. He did not play the team, the starting five that got us to the conference finals. He did not want to play D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves. He did not want to play LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Vanderbilt all at the same time. Even though that was the starting five that got us to the promised land, that was the conference finals. No. He said, I am better than that. I'm going to come up with a different starting five, that literally let us down time after time after time. And that is why we cannot succumb to these people who want to drive us on the path of incompetence. I looked for the best in Darvin Ham in the 2023-2024 season. And what did that leave me down? A place of misery, depression, and no preaching. No preaching on the Tuesday on the FMC. I let you down. I let all you people down. But this is why. We needed the right light, the right white light, the great white hope that was J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick. Sometimes, you know, what some people don't realize, Jeremy, is that the devil was once an angel. And sometimes a blue devil can become an angel for the purple and gold. That's what's happened in these first four games. So I got a scripture to read. This is 2 Kings 16:15. Ladies and gentlemen, follow along with me. King Ahaz then gave these orders to Uriah the priest. And he said, and I quote, on the large new altar, offer the morning burnt offering and the evening grain offering, the king's burnt offering and his grain offering, and the burnt offering of all the people of the land, and then their grain offering and their drink offering. Splash against this altar the blood of all the burnt offerings and sacrifices, but I will use the bronze altar for seeking guidance. And that is what J.J. Redick is. He is the guidance that we needed. We needed the guidance of a blue devil turn a purple and gold angel. We needed the guidance of one of the greatest shooters in college basketball history. And he has a brain above all else. He is going to put on a coaching masterpiece, a masterclass in 2024, 2025. And that's what he did in the first three games, running the offense through. It came true. It came true. Sometimes, you see, sometimes, guys, when we do these type of shows, you make predictions and you think it's going to be for that year, but sometimes it comes 3 years later. Because leading the NBA in scoring after the first week is Anthony Marshawn Davis. Marshawn Davis Jr. Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Leading the NBA, 33 points a game, 12 rebounds, a steal and a half, 2.5 blocks. I said it on our preview. He gonna be a top five defensive player of the year, but I was wrong. I was 3 years late. I saw 3 years into the future. I'm like, that's so Raven. It's the future I can see. And I saw it 3 years in advance. Top five NBA MVP. Anthony Marshawn Davis Jr. He's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's going to make me look right. He's going to make me look right. I was right in advance. In advance. Don't say I was wrong that year. No, I wasn't wrong that year. I was just right in advance. And that's what Anthony Marshawn Davis is going to do. LeBron James getting a triple-double against the Sacramento Kings. He guided us 14 points in the fourth quarter. That's how he do. And then we had Austin Reeves. He guided us, and he led us to the victory against the Phoenix Suns in Los Angeles. And we are on the right path. We are on the right path. That's what I say. Anthony Marshawn Davis running the offense, top of the key, being a passer, being a facilitator out of the post, and guiding us. We have the guidance of the NBA Coach of the Year, J.J. Redick. That is all for this week. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you all for listening. This has been our Lakers Church for October 29th in the year of our Lord, 2024.
Amen. Look, they're 3-1. They're good. I got nothing to say, nothing bad to say about them. Anthony Davis does look like your top five MVP candidate, the agenda you've been pushing for 3 years now. It's four games. We shall see a month from now how things look. But four games in, they look very good. Austin Reeves looks good. You know who you – I don't think you mentioned him. Rui Hachimura.
Rui Hachimura, the greatest name in the NBA, Rui Hachimura.
He's looked like a completely new player for them. He looks way more aggressive. He looks like the guy that you thought he was going to be, and a lot of people thought he was going to be last year. You know, last offseason, oh, he's working out every day with LeBron. LeBron's taking him under the – oh, this is the breakout year for Rui Hachimura. And it never really came last year.
Because of Darvin Ham. And we blame, he's the scapegoat. He's the Jimmy Jacobs of the Los Angeles Lakers. We blaming everything on him. He gone now.
He is gone now. And we'll talk about where he's at now and how that team's looking. Because that might be, I don't know if we're doing bottom five, top five again, like we did last year. But if we should.
There we go.
There's a clear team at the bottom who should be a lot better than they are right now. But Rui Hachimura has been a big breakout for them. Davis has been, he's been everything he should have been all these years. And hopefully, I got nothing against Anthony Davis. I hope he's consistent. That's what we want. That's what we want. Consistency out of Anthony Davis. And we'll see if he can stay consistent. So good on the Lakers. They look good. Lost to the Suns last night, but the Suns have looked more impressive than I think maybe people were going to, certainly me. I didn't know what to think of the Suns, but they've looked good through four games. There's only one undefeated team in the Western Conference right now, SP3.
my pick to become the NBA champions.
Yeah.
Why are you so depressed? You're 3-0.
I'm gonna be depressed all season. Like, unless we win a title, I'm gonna be depressed all season. We could literally go 98-0, and until that final game, I'm gonna be depressed. Does not matter. It's just it's my nature to be pessimistic, to wait for the other shoe to drop on this stuff. They look really good, and that's the concerning part, is they look really good. I don't even think they played their best basketball yet. The first two games, they shot like trash from three. They were top five shooting, three-point shooting team in the league last year. The first two games, they shot like 20% from three. Still won by double digits. Beat the Nuggets, who we might have to talk about a little bit. Like, the Nuggets was maybe an impressive, maybe not impressive win. Can't quite tell on them yet. The Bulls are a middle-of-the-road team, and the Hawks are a middle-of-the-road team, both in the East, which makes things worse. Like, if you're middle of the road in the East, you're terrible in the West. So I don't find any of their wins against these teams super convincing yet. But what do I always say? You can only play who's in front of you, and if you handle business like you should against those teams – then that says more than, oh, they won by, you know, a last second shot, or it was close in the fourth quarter or anything. They beat all these teams by double digits. You know, they handle business against these teams. Chet looks like he looks like a most improved candidate. I don't know if he'll get it. I hate that award, but like he's looking like the guy who I kind of thought he would look like as far as what he needed to work on, which was just really using his size, understanding that at the position he's bigger than a lot of these dudes and he can attack off the dribble on these dudes. He doesn't have to settle all the time, and he's not settling this year. Shea's taken a lot more pull-up threes. It hasn't found consistency yet. I'm not concerned about that because he's such a good shooter and has such a feel for the game that it just feels like he's working himself into these shots. And now that he's gonna keep taking them as the season progresses, it's gonna pay off. J-Dub, I don't know if he's bothered by the ankle injury. He's been, I don't, it's tough to even say disappointing because he's averaging like 18-4 or something, which is like good as a third option because he's the third option right now behind Chet. Like, he's been playing fine. Everybody, the defense, man. The defense. I put this on Twitter and Louie commented on it. They're not even playing like their best defensive lineups the entire time because Caruso comes off the bench. Sometimes they play Dort and Caruso. Sometimes they play Kaysen and Dort. Sometimes it's Dort and Caruso. The game against the Hawks was like relatively close. The Hawks are actually leading for a good chunk of that game. And then the fourth quarter, Daniel just throws out there Kaysen, Caruso, and Dort. And Trae Young looked like he would have rather spent time in a cell than being guarded by all three. He's like, just what can we do? I don't feel like playing basketball right now. Send me to jail. Send me whatever you got to do. He would have been anywhere else in the world than on a basketball court against these three guys. It's such a luxury to have these three defenders and you could just throw them at anybody you want to. And then, hey, if they somehow get past these guys, here's Chet at the rim. And then we're going to add Isaiah Hartenstein to this group. Like, the defense is so good. Caruso offensively hasn't done anything. Like, no. Anything. I think he scored like 6 total points. He's done nothing. Nothing. Offensively, but he flies around, he gets a lot of tip rebounds to keep possessions alive, and then defensively, like, he gets his hands on so many, like, he jumps the passing lanes, he gets his hands on the ball, whether it's a pass or whether he's just like poking in there. He's so good and so smart defensively. It doesn't feel like the team's played their best basketball yet, and they're still 3-0 with like a winning margin of like 13 points. it's scary how good this team could be once all the pieces are working together. And I'm going to be salty and just depressed all season, no matter how good they are.
Fair. That is fair. That is fair. I mean, I understand your pessimism. And you got it. It's the right thing to do when your team is good. It's a nice little counterbalance.
I should enjoy it.
Don't be like me that enjoys my team winning way too much that I have to take people to church.
Nah. There's different approaches to it, right? Like, I love your optimism and I love the church sermons and everything. I wish I was a little bit more optimistic, but it's basically emotionally hedging of like, I can't get too high because then the losses hurt more. So I just try to stay even of like, all right, cool, good win. And then when we inevitably do lose, then I won't feel as bad. If we win, great. Like, you know, I was a wreck during the Avs when they won the cup, and we went 16-4 in the playoffs. You couldn't have told by my mood that we went 16-4, but it's going to be the same thing. It's just, again, emotionally hedging on things, but I can recognize how good the team is. It's not that I'm not going to sit here and tell you this is a bad team and, oh, they're just winning games and they're getting lucky and everything. Like, I can fully recognize this is a very good basketball team that's going to give a lot of teams a lot of trouble throughout the season. We're going to lose some games. Every team loses games. No team goes 82-0. They're going to lose some games, but they're going to be a force all season. They're going to be a force in the playoffs. And it's just, hopefully we can put it all together and maybe we can win a title, but it's a very good basketball team. And I look forward to continue to watch the entire season because I know it's going to be good and entertaining games, and we're going to win more than we're going to lose. I figure that much, unless injuries like really decimate the team. But I'm hoping my hockey team has enough injuries to offset my basketball team having a shit ton of injuries.
That's the right way to think about it. Right way to think about it, people. But yeah, I'm liking what the Thunder have been able to do so far. I agree with you that they haven't played even their best basketball yet, and their team is not even at, you know, 100% health yet, and they've still looked good through these three games. But yeah, I think that the West has been I liked a bunch of the teams in the West. I agree with you also with the Phoenix Suns. They've looked way better. I pretty much was giving up on that game with the first game with the Phoenix Suns when they were up by 28. I was like, oh man, it's the Lakers doing this shit again. And then we came back. So that's what made me as positive as I was to kick off the show about the Lakers. I think the Dallas Mavericks, they've looked pretty good in the first couple of games as well. So yeah, it's been some solid play. Even the Clippers. The Clippers have looked better than I thought they would.
Dallas is a weird team, and I'm not sure they've played anybody yet. They beat the Spurs, who Wimby hasn't been disappointing, but when you look at Wimby and you look at Chet through three games, again, I know the team argument. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Spurs are as good as the Thunder. That's not even close to being true. Like, the Thunder have a much, much, much better team than the Spurs. But the approach looks so much different. Like, I'd love to see Wimby attack a little bit more than he does. I know a lot of them may have like, oh, he's just settling for all these long threes and everything. And like, there is truth to that. It does feel like he's settling for these threes.
Without VA, I would have paid $25,000 for my hospital stay,
$42,000 for my education,
$74,000 for my home down payment. But because of my service, I paid zero.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Way too often. When he could probably just beat guys with a combination of his size and skill, because he's obviously a lot taller and lankier than a lot of the centers. Like, he's a lot more fleet-footed than a lot of these centers as well. It feels like he can attack them off the dribble and get them moving. Like, that's what we've seen out of Chet, is he's not settling for these threes. Like, he's pump faking and beating guys with his first step and going hard to the rim. And we're not seeing that as much out of Wemby. And like, I'd like to see that a little bit more. He doesn't have to be a post player. Chet's not playing from the post because he's not going to back anybody down. But he is, you know, when he gets the ball on the perimeter, jab step, pump fake, get to the rim, or get to a spot in the mid-range, like whatever it might be. Like, we haven't seen that from Wemby yet. And I think we will. It's three games into the season. I'm not going to make cast assertions of like, oh, he's a bust type of thing. But the approach is what has been – that's been noticeable of the between the two. Chet's approach is much more aggressive than Wemby's approach. And I'd like to see Wemby's approach be more aggressive. But the Mavericks beat the Spurs. Again, I don't know how good they are. They'll probably beat the Thunder on Wednesday. Wemby will go like friggin' 7 from 10 from three or something, some absurd numbers. And then they beat the Jazz last night. The Jazz are not good. And then Taylor Hendricks had the really bad injury last night. Don't look that up, everybody. It's an awful injury. It was
Sean Levinson. S.
Yeah, I was gonna say Sid. Psycho, yeah. Sid, like, is, I think it was the same kind of injury, like the tibia, but yeah, that was a bad injury. Like, the Jazz aren't very good, and then the team they beat, I forget who the Mavs, they beat the Jazz. Team they lost to was an actual like good team.
I think it was Minnesota. No, they faced Minnesota tonight.
Game. Yeah, they lost to the Suns. So there you go. And the Suns are, look, the Suns have looked good. So I'm not quite sure what to make of the Jazz just yet, because their two wins aren't great, and their loss was against like the only good team they've played so far. So we should get more on the Mavs against the Timberwolves tonight. That's a good game. I'm looking forward to that one. Let's talk about two disappointing teams. Oh, they got their first win last night, but the Denver Nuggets haven't looked great. Like, it took them overtime and a Scotty Barnes injury for them to beat the Toronto Raptors last night. They lost to the Thunder. No real shame in losing to the Thunder. Like, OKC, we all expect them to be one of the top teams in the league this year. So can't really say there's much shame in that. And then they lost to what was their other loss?
The Clippers.
Was it the Clippers?
Yeah.
Okay. Look, the Clippers have looked better than expected this season, but that's probably a game you should win if you're going to be a top team. The main thing with the Nuggets that has been pretty eye-opening is they don't got much around Jokic right now.
Nope.
Like, Jamal Murray looked better last night than he has, especially he had a great finish over and under the basket to tie the game, to send it to overtime. His shooting, still a little bit of a concern. Averaging 17 points, you expect a little bit more out of Jamal Murray. Shooting well from three at the very least, but you still expect more than 17 out of him. They don't have much in the way of three-point shooting. You lose Caldwell Pope. You lose Bruce Brown over the years. I know Bruce Brown was 2 years ago. Caldwell Pope was this year. You replace with Russell Westbrook. We know he's not a good shooter. Christian Brown, I thought he played well against OKC. He might, outside of Jokic, he was their best player. Christian Brown's looked like fine in that role. But the bench has been a problem for Denver for years, and that's still the same.
They didn't address that during the offseason. That was the biggest.
They thought Russ was.
I could have told you that. I could have told you that wasn't going to look good. I know we only got three games as a sample size, but we already got freaking rumor in the rumor mill, them saying that it was a mistake to get Russell Westbrook and that Russell Westbrook may be done. Three games in, and you're already hearing those type of rumors, then.
That was always going to be the case, though, unless he played like, I don't know, a new version of Russell Westbrook, but he was never going to play like a new version of Russell Westbrook. He's Russ. It is what it is with him. I don't know. It's the Arrested Development meme. It's like, yeah, but yes, this time it's going to work. It's like, no, it's not. It's not. It doesn't work. I love Russ. Absolutely love him. One of my favorite basketball players of all time. He is who he is. Like, maybe
some people got fooled by that half a season with the Clippers. That's what
everyone gets fooled by that half a season. That's the thing, is everyone gets fooled by that. He had the half a season in Houston where it looked like, oh, Russ has figured it out. And then what happened in like the playoffs? He goes to Washington where they have no expectations, averages a triple double. It's like, oh, well, it's Washington. It's a bad team. He goes to the Lakers. Oh, it's coaching. We'll figure it out. He came off the bench and like he played well coming off the bench. It's like, oh, they found his role. He goes to the Clippers. Yeah, he played four games as the starter and they looked good. Then they traded for Harden and then they were a mess. But then he figured it out coming off the bench. It's like, oh, look, it's good. They figured it out. He's going to come December. He's going to look good. They're going to figure it out come December. And he's going to play well for the rest of the regular season. And then the playoffs are going to start and he's going to be Russ again. That's how it goes with Russell Westbrook.
He's got a bipolar like game where he can figure it out with a team, but then he goes right back to what he was before.
He's not going to be a good shooter. He's never been a good shooter. It's only gotten worse throughout his career. He can't attack like he used to. He'll have moments, but he can't attack like he used to. His defense has been very good. I will say that. Like, he's actually – Russ has always been like – he likes to do the Patrick Beverley, he trick y'all stuff. But like, Russ has tricked a lot of people defensively because he does hustle. He does play hard. He does get a lot of steals. But, like, off ball, he's always ball watching because he's always looking for like the steal and jumping the passing lane. So he gets beat back door all the time. He dies on screens, but he's actually played like hard and well defensively this year, but offensively he is who he is. The Nuggets got real shooting concerns and you only address that if they make some type of move. It's probably too early to make some type of move. Jokic having to score 40, I think, is the biggest concern. Jokic is a great scorer, probably underrated as like just an overall scorer because he has such great touch around the rim. He is a much better shooter than he wants to give himself credit for, and maybe even like teams want to give him credit for. But the assist numbers the past couple of games have been died. And that's where the concern shows, because like Jokic getting 40 isn't his game. He can obviously do it, but that's not his game. Jokic's game is 25 to 30 and 10. That's his game.
And 10 and 8 yeah, should be his line pretty much every night, because that's what he basically was averaging when he was winning all the MVPs. This is why I say before y'all should have watched the first week of the NBA season, you should have watched our NBA preview. Because we tried to tell people, we had people in the chat saying, oh, I still think the Nuggets are gonna be good, and I'm just like, they did not do well this offseason. They took losses. And yes, Jokic is one of the all-time greats and one of the best players of this decade. But you have to have a little bit more than that. And what we saw from Jamal Murray in the Olympics, it did not look like he took another step. It took like he was kind of just stuck in place. And we kind of been seeing that translate into the first couple of games. I'm sure they're going to get it together. And I'm sure Jamal Murray is going to be that consistent number two for the Denver Nuggets. But once you get through Jokic, Jamal Murray, and a couple of the role players, there's not a lot of depth there. And I don't see how they can beat like the Oklahoma City Thunder or even like the Big Three in Phoenix or the Big Two in Dallas if they only have these two guys who can consistently contribute for them. They probably are going to be a candidate to have to make a move either sometime early in the season or at least by the trade deadline to really kind of shore them up so they can become like one of the top teams in the West and be, counted on to actually make it far into the conference finals and finals again.
when it comes to Denver, the hope for them is it's a long season and these young players just start to develop throughout the season. Julian Strawweather, like, he starts to grow into his role a little bit more. Michael Porter Jr., I don't know what you have with him. Like, I thought he had a good preseason, and then the regular season hasn't been great. Peyton Watson is the other guy I was trying to think of a young player who can hopefully just grow into the role and develop throughout the season. Because as much as we like to, hey, let's do, as much as we like to, the offseason is improvement. J-Dub had a quote, and this is what I was talking about with Shea in the pull-up threes. Like, yeah, the game is where you, like, actual games is where you work on your game as well. Like, I've noticed this a lot with OKC in these kind of blowout games is, like, Shea's taking these pull-up threes. He was doing this at the end of the Nuggets game. It was like a 13, 15-point game with 2 minutes to go. And Shea's just jacking up pull-up threes. It's like, these aren't, like, it's whatever. You take them, it's fine. But it's, like, early in the shot clock, pull-up threes. It's like, eh, not really the most advisable shots in the world in a close game. But in a 13-point game with 2 minutes to go, sure, take this little pull-up three. And that's when it, like, really hit me even more of, like, oh, yeah, they're just, like, working on stuff. Because the game's out of hand. Why wouldn't you take this shot? At some point, you might have to take this shot when it does matter. And I saw it in the game the other night against Atlanta. Again, the game was pretty much out of hand. Caruso sets a screen, and Shea takes a pull-up three off the Caruso screen. And he drains it, and that was kind of a dagger shot right there. But this is the hope for guys like Watson and Strawweather is – they continue to improve on a game-to-game basis because the offseason's over. So now it's the games where you have to make your improvements. But if they don't show those improvements, then yeah, you got to figure something out and make some type of move. They got to get more out of Michael Porter Jr. though. He, again, yeah. in the preseason, he looked good. I thought he looked much more aggressive and he wasn't settling. He was more than just a three-point shooter. And so far, like, he hasn't even been a good three-point shooter. He's shooting 20% from three this year. So they got to figure that out, first of all, is he's got to rediscover his three-point shot. But then he's got to find other ways to score if the three ball isn't falling.
Yeah. So I think the Denver Nuggets are going to improve. They are going to be in the top half of the West. It just hasn't been a good start for them. I think a bigger team that we thought would be in the top half of their conference – the Milwaukee Bucks are a bigger issue. They got bigger issues than even the Denver Nuggets.
Our pal Jake Shaw says, if you don't have the bottom five gimmick again this year, the Milwaukee Bucks aren't in it. I may never listen to it again. This is a lie, FMC forever, but this team stinks. I don't know if we're doing a complete top five, bottom five. We're kind of just talking about the first week of the season. But yeah, if we were doing top five, bottom five, the Milwaukee Bucks might be at the very bottom of this list. Like, I know there are teams that don't have a win, so technically they are better than the Detroit Pistons. They at least have a win. They're better than the Utah Jazz. They at least have a win. The Bucks are 1-3.
They're the most disappointing of the first
week. By far, even more than the Nuggets. Like, the Nuggets haven't, like, the Nuggets don't have great wins over, like, they have. Their one win was, again, overtime against Toronto. Not great. And Barnes got injured at the end of the game. Their losses to the Clippers, maybe they're better than we thought. To the Thunder, okay, fine. The Bucks beat the Sixers without Embiid and without Paul George in the season opener. They look fine. Again, you play the teams in front of you, you beat the teams in front of you. They played a banged-up Sixers team. They looked relatively impressive in that win. Loss to the Bulls. Lost to the Celtics last night, fine. The Nets. I don't think any team should be losing to the Nets.
No.
On paper, no. One of the worst constructed teams.
I think they are the worst. I said that during our preview. I think they're the worst team constructed going into this season. And the fact that Milwaukee got lost to them is an issue. But I think
not
the biggest
lost,
issue.
Not only
they, yeah,
lost.
They got trounced.
They gave up 70 points in the second half to the Nets. What? Dennis Schroeder is out here completely cooking Damian Lillard. You could have Dennis Schroeder for a bag of peanuts, and you're paying Damian Lillard $40
million. But I know the issue here, Jeremy. You know what it is?
Doc Rivers.
No, it's not
the
even
Doc. Always Doc Rivers.
It's not Doc Rivers.
It's Doc Rivers.
They got the biggest subtraction by addition of the offseason. Because not only do they have Darvin Ham as a top assistant coach.
Yeah. Mention him.
They got the kryptonite of the Los Angeles Lakers 2023-2024 season. Literally, I tried to erase him from my memory because I wasn't able to mention he was the one that fucking Darvin Ham kept. Kept fucking putting in instead of our starting five that made it to the freaking conference finals. Taurean Prince. Yeah. Is on this team. Oh my god, no wonder they're struggling. They are struggling. They got all the bad juju from the Los Angeles Lakers of 2023-2024 and put it on the Milwaukee Bucks. Taurean Prince and Darvin Ham. This company, how does Taurean Prince keep getting jobs? How does he keep
starting jobs? He's playing 34 minutes a night.
How does this happen? How does this happen? I blame you, Darvin Ham. You, Darvin Ham.
Yeah, Darvin Ham is definitely an issue. Doc Rivers and Darvin Ham sounds like the worst coaching combination you could possibly have. Like, if I said, give me just a team with a head coach and assistant coach who would exponentially fuck things up. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who you have. You could have prime Kobe, prime Shaq, prime Jordan, prime LeBron on the team. Give me a head coach and assistant coach combo who would screw this up. You'd probably name Doc Rivers and Darvin Ham.
Yep. Yep.
I don't get it. I don't get how they are this bad. Bobby Portis has taken more shots than Giannis. Like, what? In what world is Bobby Portis? Jake, when I was talking about a big who I wanted OKC to get in the offseason, like, well, we need a big who we just needed a big. Everyone knew OKC needed a big. And Bobby Portis was a name that was kind of on the trade block there. And I was like, yeah, Bobby Portis would be bad. Like, he can stretch the floor. He plays hard. I'm not mad at Bobby Portis if that's the name we get. But Bobby Portis shouldn't be taking more shots than Giannis. What? In what world against the Nets is this happening? Last night, at least, Giannis was taking a lot more shots. But yeah. Bobby Portis looks kind of cooked right now. And it's not great for them because he's about their only competent player off the bench. I'm glad we didn't get Bobby Portis. Bless him. Maybe it would have been fine. But, man, their defense isn't good. Their defense looks like last year's defense to start the season. The Celtics didn't even have a great game last night. I mean, Peyton Pritchard went off for 28 points. Maybe they should have, tried to put somebody in front of him. But, like, Tatum didn't play well. Peyton Pritchard just killed him. They're like, sure, Peyton Pritchard's going to hit 8 threes. Yeah, we'll just keep feeding him the ball. I don't know
The Celtics have looked like they just took the whole game plan of, like, the prime dynasty Golden State Warriors and then put it on steroids. But the amount of threes they go for and hit is ridiculous.
Yeah. The Celtics also just look bored, honestly. Like,
yeah.
Like the Pistons game, they let the Pistons crawl back into it until they're like, okay, let's not do that anymore. And the Celtics are, this is why I picked them to go back to back. They didn't make any changes. Everybody basically got better. Everyone understands their role on this team. It's going to be a tough team to contend with throughout the season. So the Celtics are who I thought they were. The Bucks are way worse than I thought they were. I had hopes for the Bucks. I was like, Dame and Giannis, another season together. Maybe Jake can speak on this better than I can, because I'm not like pretend I've watched every single Milwaukee game. I've watched more than I've watched more because I like watching Giannis more than other teams, yeah. I should say. I don't know what Dame and Giannis are like off the court, but I've seen a lot of Bucks fans say that they look like they're just work friends. They show up, they play basketball together, and then they never talk to each other otherwise. Again, maybe I'm off base, but I've seen some Bucks people on Bucks Twitter say that. And it's very easy to say that when like the team is losing, obviously. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I've seen from Bucks Twitter, is that like Dame and Giannis just, they don't have great off-court chemistry, and that's affecting on-court chemistry. Because you would think these two guys next to each other, and it'd be tough to find like a better 1-2 duo. They play, their skill set complements each other very well. And then it has not translated through a season and four games thus far. Maybe they turn it around. I ain't got much faith with Doc Rivers to turn it around.
And this was supposed to be the turnaround year, because they had a whole offseason training camp that they went through finally after they made the trade late in the offseason last season. So they didn't have that time before the last season, but they did have it this season and hasn't looked good so far. I'm sure they're going to turn it around. They're going to be a playoff team, but it's not a good first impression on this season for sure.
I think they'll still make the playoffs. Like the East sucks. The yes. East teams will start to fall back. I think there's
you need at least with having a player like Giannis, you would make the playoffs or have a shot to make the playoffs. When you have Giannis and Damian Lillard, I am just positive you're going to turn it around and you're going to make it. But I mean, if you wanted a thing to negate having a Giannis and Damian Lillard, have the 1-2 punch of Doc Rivers and Darvin Ham.
Any other teams surprising, jumping out at you, or disappointing for you?
If I had to say kind of surprising me, I have like the you of course have the Cavs, who got a big win yesterday against the Knicks. So that was impressive for them. Or was it 2 days ago against the Knicks?
It was last night.
It was last night. I never know because of the time difference and stuff. But yeah, they look good against the Knicks. I got to give them credit, and they're also 4-0. Man, did Pablo Banchero? What the hell did he eat last night? Because this man went off. Like, yo, I was watching. I saw a whole bunch of people on NBA Twitter talking about this game, and I'm like, okay, let me go. I found the stream and I found it. This man went off for 50 points. He was like 13 of 16 at one point in the game. I was just like, wow, this is not the Pablo Banchero that I remember. But I did say during our preview, once again, watch the preview, I did say he was going to take that leap, and it looked like that last night with 50.
One assist away from a 50-point triple-double. One assist away. I would have been pissed if someone ruined the 50-point triple-double for me. You know, like, he had other potential assists. So somebody missed a shot somewhere that screwed up this 50-point triple-double for him. The Magic, as Louis called last season, the Magic looked like the team that we kind of expected. I was high on the Cavs coming into the season. I'm always a fan of roster continuity, and that's what the Cavs had. They brought back basically the same team they had last year. The team last year was good. They just got injured in the playoffs and ended up losing in the playoffs. But like, the team they had last year was good. So I'm not surprised that the Cavs are off to a good start. The Pacers have been disappointing. Like, they're 1-3. They lost to a banged up Sixers team in overtime. Tyrese Halliburton has been kind of cold to start the season. They still don't play any defense. I think they'll end up turning it around, but their one win was against the Pistons, and even that was a close game. Lost to the Knicks, got blown out by them. Again, a loss to the Sixers, a team you probably should have beaten, given the Sixers only have Maxey right now, and if you're supposed to be good. And then a close loss against the Magic. The Magic are a good team, but the defensive issues are still there with the Indiana Pacers. They've not gotten better at all. And so they're going to need Halliburton to play like he did last season to compensate for the defensive issues. And Halliburton hasn't quite been that guy yet. The shooting numbers have fallen. The assist numbers for Halliburton, like he had 10 assists last night, but they were down before that. What was his assist numbers? Yeah, he had 4 assists against the Pistons, 5 against the Knicks, only 2 against the Sixers. Like, you're used to Halliburton getting double-digit assists every game. He looked more like himself last night against the Magic, but before that, like, his numbers weren't good. I mean, that Knicks game when he went 0-for, that was just a rough game for him. So
yeah, that game was pretty much over in the second quarter.
It wasn't a good performance by the Pacers. The Knicks are another team that have, like, they're 1-2 right now, and their one win was against the Pacers. They've lost to they lost on opening night to the Celtics. Called that one, by the way. I said that game was not going to be close, and it was.
You
not
were right. Close. They almost set the record for most threes in a regular season game. And I watched that game. I was very much surprised. They did not do any pick and roll with Jalen Brunson and Karl Anthony Towns. I was like, I would think that would be your go-to. Like, this whole league is a high pick and roll league, pretty much. Like, a lot of people is either high pick and roll or basically motion offense to get threes. So, like, that's most of every team in the NBA. And when you have arguably one of the best small guards in the league and you have one of the best shooting centers in the league, I think that high pick and roll should be your MO. That should have been the first thing that you worked on in the off season. Well, you didn't have much time, to be fair, in like training camp and off season, but on preseason, you should have been working on high pick and roll between these guys, and they didn't run it at all. I think they did run a little bit more. I only saw the highlights for the Pacer game, but I want to see them get that down. That's got to be something they work on in these first couple of games, is work on high pick and roll, because that should be their MO with two of the best that can play at that type of style.
I think the Knicks will be okay as the season progresses. Again, like I said in our preview, I thought they'd get off to a rough start because of the trade at the end, really at the start of training camp, at the end of the offseason. And it's going to take time for that team to just kind of come together. They lost to the Celtics, who we all expect to be at the top of the East. They lost to the Cavs, who are also undefeated. So not terrible losses or anything. They got a stretch coming up against Miami. They'll be a tough team just because Miami can always be annoying to play against. But Miami's very inconsistent. And then Detroit and Houston and Atlanta. Those are games that are winnable games for the Knicks if they're going to be as good as we think they're going to be. Anything else from the world of the National Basketball Association?
So we will do our first top five, bottom five next week. I think that we did a nice little overview of all the teams and that we were kind of disappointed, happy with in the first week of the season. So top five, bottom five, we'll start next week. You guys, if you're watching us on demand, you're watching us in the chat, you can give us your top five, bottom five for the first week. But next week, we'll start the FMC top five, bottom five, where we will be the standard on the rankings of the NBA season, because we're always good at that. Once again, watch the preview, because a lot of stuff we were proven right about in this first.
Okay, week. let's switch it up this year. Actually, let's do this year top three, bottom three. Let's cut a couple teams, and here's why.
Okay,
we're gonna cut a couple teams because we're gonna introduce hottest take next week.
Okay,
just a completely absurd hottest take based on the week or the season thus far. All right,
that sounds good. I like it. You know I'm good for the hot takes, sir. I promise to be a little objective, and it won't be always Laker hot takes. I promise guys.
So for if we were gonna do a hottest take this week, mine would be the Bucks should trade Giannis. Just go ahead, tear it down now. It's over. It's done. The Bucks should trade Giannis because they're not going to win it this year. They're a small market team. They gotta rebuild. They should trade Giannis. That's my hottest take this week.
All right. So I'll give a hot take that has to do with the trade, but I'll go all the way and say who they should trade for.
Okay.
The Denver Nuggets should trade Jamal Murray for Bradley Beal in the Phoenix Suns.
Oh. I don't know if Phoenix – well, maybe Phoenix. I don't know if Phoenix does that.
No, I mean, Phoenix, they've been having Devin Booker, who is a two guard. I don't care how much he handles the ball. He is a two guard. He has been their point guard for now going on two seasons. He needs to be a two guard. They need a point guard. The Denver Nuggets need a more consistent number two who can score. I say Bradley Beal for Jamal Murray.
And, but then your point guard in Denver is Russell Westbrook. I don't feel like that's good. I don't think Denver does.
Hey, the only way we're going to maximize Russell Westbrook on the court is if he's on the court as a starter.
I don't think Denver does that move. I like the hot take. I like it. I like that's a very hot take. I actually had one with the infamous Sammer when we were talking about how disappointing the Nuggets and the Bucks are. And he's like, we should get Giannis and Jokic on the same team. I was like, this is a trade that's never going to happen, but the framework is basically Murray, Porter Jr., and every draft pick imaginable for Giannis, because that's the only way the money really works. And then if you're the Bucks, you just trade all these pieces for draft picks and young players. You just tear it all down at that point, because you're not rolling with a lineup of Lillard, Murray, Porter Jr., Chris Middleton, who can't stay healthy, Brooke Lopez. Like, you're not going with this lineup. So you're just basically trading all of these guys for expiring contracts and draft picks and going from there. But this is how you get Giannis on the Nuggets, is Murray, Porter Jr., and 1,500 draft picks.
Fair. I'm with it. I'm here for it.
Oh, that's a good hot take, Louie. Doc Rivers doesn't make it to Christmas. That's good. Oh, man. Fired within two. I don't know. Make
Darvin Ham this head coach.
Yeah, that's the problem. You better have an actual good head coach ready to go, because you can't promote Darvin Ham. All right, let's bring on our pal, Cher Delaware. We got some trash reality to talk about here. There we go. Hello, Cher.
Hi, Cher.
How are you doing?
Oh, I am so ready to talk about these terrible humans on Love is Blind.
All right, well, let's start there. Let's start there with Love is Blind. We had the wedding episode, one episode, because there was only two weddings. Only two couples made it down the aisle. The wedding episode opened with Marissa and Ramses and talking in their apartment. And Ramses is just like, I had a conversation with my sister's cousin, second brother, twice removed, and this is a bad idea. It made me realize some things.
No, I hurt my ex-wife way more than I thought I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I never considered how bad it hurt her when we got a divorce. Like, yeah. Huh?
Oh, what? What are you even talking about? What are you babbling about, sir?
I felt so bad for Marissa in this. Like, she was just heartbroken. And I saw that she said, like, it dragged on for a lot longer than what they showed. Like, it was, the whole thing was a lot longer than obviously what they showed. But I was texting Mrs. Jeremy through all of this as I was watching it, and me and her were just like, he's an idiot. Like, he literally found out that his ex was getting remarried and was like, oh no, I need to do something. Like, I was so mad through the whole thing. And if he said energy one more time, like,
oh, that's, yeah.
Oh my God. Every time he was saying that, I was like, I'm going to freaking go through this screen and drop kick this man. Like, I was getting so irritated.
He gaslighted her. Because that was the whole reason he said he liked her. was because of her energy, and now he's saying her energy is the reason why they're breaking up.
Like, I get the energy argument if there is some actual reasoning and examples behind it. Some people do just have bad energy. Some people have good energy. But you can point to, oh, you have bad energy because you're just kind of a bitch. Like, you're just kind of an asshole. And that's why your energy is bad. You say mean things. You cut people down. Your energy, that's why your energy is bad. Oh, you have good energy. You're always happy. You're always cracking jokes. You have good energy. This person just, Ramses just like, our energies, energy, energy. And there was no actual example of like what he meant by this. That's where I was getting annoyed of what do you mean by energy? Like, it, you're just saying this as almost a cop out to break up with her. So King Potato saying Marissa kept asking, are you sure? Was so sad. Oh, yes. So the wife, when we were watching this, it didn't hit her for a second because, you know, these couples always have these talks before the wedding and it's like, oh, is it just kind of like, let's talk and let's figure out where we are type of thing. And then we'll see what happens down the aisle. And I was telling her like, no, they're breaking up. Like, this is done with them. And like, once Marissa started breaking down and crying, it was like, yeah, this is a breakup conversation, not a, hey, let's feel things out and mm-hmm. see where our energies are the day before the wedding. It's like, no, this is over between them. I felt horrible for her. Somebody, I think it was on Reddit, I read of like, the cameras caught their actual breakup moment compared to Nick and Hannah, where it felt like they had their breakup and it was off camera. And it's like, hey, we got to get together and basically redo this whole conversation again because we got to get it on TV. Where for this one, it was, no, they got everything that was happening in real time. And that's what it seemed like with Marissa, because she was going through it, and justifiably so, given the conversation that they were having. But I felt terrible for her.
Yeah, it was painful. It was painful to watch. Just seeing her, like, when she called her mom and was telling her mom.
Oh, I was ready for her mom to come over and start cutting dicks off.
Yo, exactly. Yeah. Cut his balls off. I was like, where's mom with the knife? Where's mom with the knife?
So I felt so bad for her, but I was like, you know, at least it happened this way and it didn't happen at the altar, because I would rather it happen, you know, it's still on TV, but it's not, I'm not living it with a bunch of people watching me as I'm living it, you know, like I was glad that it happened that way, but I felt so bad for her. And she's like, basically like, what do I need to do to fix this? And he's like, it's just the energy. The energy's just off. And I'm like, dude, if you freaking say energy, like, if you're going to say the energy, like you said, explain that. Don't just keep basically telling her it's her fault because the energy is off now. Like, oh, that made me so mad. That idiot.
Such an idiot. Oh, man. Yeah, I didn't like him from the condom conversations on.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Like this confirmed that he was the worst. Like, I feel so bad for her. And that was really kind of like hard to watch, just how much she was breaking down and she wanted to keep it all together and asking him if he was sure. Like, you could tell that she really wanted to make this work. Like, she's the same girl that the week prior, she was saying she would wait, she would stay in a horrible marriage for 5 to 6 years just to see, just to try to make it work. So I think that it was for the best that he ended it right then and there. But it was just really hard to watch because of how he kind of broke up with her so passive aggressively. Like, it was just, I'm just going to say something general. I'm not going to explain it. I'm going to leave you kind of in confusion while breaking up with you.
Yeah, he wasn't really explaining anything, like why they couldn't just take a step back and not get married yet or anything. It was literally just him saying that about the energy over and over. He wasn't explaining, like, I'm just not ready yet or anything like that. It was just him doing that and then her breaking down and he's just standing there like waiting for her to get over it so that he can go do what he wants. And it just, yeah, we all already had a distaste for him because of the condom conversation. So I was already not cheering for him to do well. And then I was like, I hope he gets called out by one of the other cast members at least. Because like we already said, we know Vanessa and Nick are basically useless.
They suck at this.
There. Yeah.
Like, they should just be the hosts of the actual show, not the reunion. Get, like, what is her name? Maria Menounos or someone like that. Get someone like that to host the actual reunion because you don't do your jobs right.
Yeah.
We started this episode with three couples potentially going down the aisle, and then we ended up with two couples going down the aisle, and I'm not sure one of them should have even made it down the aisle.
knock Cher right up out of here.
I was disappointed, honestly. I did not want that to happen. And as Mrs. Jeremy said, it felt like his family is also complicit in this giant lie because no one is telling her. And, you know, she's so excited and she's in the back talking about what an amazing, she's waited for an amazing man and didn't want, it just kept being leftovers and she wanted an amazing, and I'm like, and this is who you got, like. And I saw that he said he doesn't think that he should have to answer any questions about it at the reunion.
What? Because I know somebody, I think I saw like a little snippet of an interview he did with the Pay or Wait podcast, Pay or Wait YouTube channel. And that's the first thing they asked him. It was like, like, did you let this be known on your application? And he's just like, no, I didn't. With a big smile, with that big goofy smile on. I'm like, this is insane. This is insane that he just has no accountability for
none. Yeah, it was like Us Weekly or something that he said he just didn't feel like that was a conversation for the reunion. It wasn't anybody's business. And I'm like, what about your wife? Is it her business? Like,
did you wait till after you told her I do that you lied and that they're not sperm babies and that you're in their life? Or did you try to make it sound like, oh, now that we're married, I think I should be in their lives?
Right.
Like, he should try to make himself look good again and be like, you know what? I think you inspired me that I should be more a part of these kids' life.
Idiot.
She felt like she just wanted to get down the aisle and... Yeah. Because she kept saying, like, oh, I'm only going to do this once. I'm going to get married once. I found my person. Like, once I find, I just know. And it just felt like once they did the engagement, that was it for her. She was going to go through with it no matter what. We'll see at the reunion how much he's called out on things and if she still feels the same way after she's learned new information. But
yeah.
This is like Trevor meets Drake. Trevor from last season of Love is Blind meets Drake the rapper in that, like, he's hiding things and not telling the truth, but he's having actual kids that were not born because he put his sperm in a cup. He put his sperm in his lesbian friend who is not so lesbian, who has gone off on social media and exposed everything. That this was a relation. I see King Potato didn't catch us last week where I talked about it, where I was just like, he cheated on his fiance at the time with his friend that was in a lesbian relationship and got her pregnant. She did a whole gender reveal that he invited his fiance to without his fiance knowing that this was a gender reveal for his child. Then when that relationship ended and the child was already born, he had another pair. He had twins with the same woman after she was done with her relationship. And it's not something that she is proud of because she's pretty much been a lesbian all her life. But he was, I guess, the exception to the rule. I don't know. She didn't claim that part, but
I'm just like, yeah, I love my kids, but I really could have picked a better guy if I was going to go with a guy. like, dang, no wonder I'm a lesbian.
He owes $30,000 in child support.
Yeah,
$30,000.
It's not good.
It's not good.
It's not good. I can't, don't know what else to say about it.
Seems bad.
Seems pretty bad, guys. I mean, the other one, it was a no-brainer with Garrett and
Taylor. Garrett and Taylor, yeah.
That was, real quickly. It was kind of like boring at this point. It was just like...
Dude, even the bachelorette parties were boring because they didn't bring back any of the people. It was just like, oh, it's all your friends. And there's only two couples anyway. It's not like they got a ton of people.
It was like they walked in at Fresh Prince into the Banks household and they were Will Smith. Like, where's everybody?
Dude, so SP3, you know, they went to a basketball game, the guys did, for their bachelor party. They went to a Wizards and Hornets game. Yes. Yeah. So when they go to the game and it's the Wizards game, the wife is like, oh, they're going to like a Wizards game. It's like, that seems like a terrible idea for a bachelor party. Let's go to see the Washington Wizards play. They're not good. It's like everyone knows they're not good. It's not like this is a surprise. And I was like, well, maybe they're playing like a good team or something. And they showed it was. I was like, oh no, they put them with two worst teams in the world. They didn't have to pay for this at all. The Wizards were paying them. Like, wait a second, we get Love and Line promotion out of this? Yeah, come on. Like, we ain't got to pay a dime for this, the Netflix
That's
people.
What I said. I was Wizards Hornets. They needed something to get people to watch the game. So they were like, hey, reality TV people, bring them down on the floor.
I was like, this is the worst bachelor party ever. Let's go to a Wizards and Hornets game? Like, no, get out of here with this. And why would you take me here?
The bachelorette party was just boring. They freaking gave them a fucking
went to like a bar.
Party. They went to a slumber. They didn't even go to a bar. They put them in a fucking warehouse and said have a slumber party.
It was just friends. There was no people coming back or anything. It was,
This might have been the weakest finale of a Love is Blind season I ever watched.
Probably. Oh, they knew it. Yeah, once you got past it was a pretty big moment, Ramses and Marissa conversation. But like after that, it was like, okay, now we know there was no real drama with Garrett and Taylor. We kind of knew that was going to happen. And I didn't even feel like there was drama with Ashley and Tyler because I was so sure she was going to say yes because she just wanted to get married. And I was positive he was going to say yes. I was like, the big stuff that we thought was gonna be a big deal, at least on the show, wasn't. So the weddings were just and only two couples. It was the most failed season that they've had. Like to only send two couples down the aisle. They both got married. I guess that's 100% success rate in that regard. But I hope the reunion, they're not let off the hook. It's disappointing that it's not gonna air until 8 o'clock tomorrow. Like, come on, just give us the damn reunion in the middle of the day. But we shall see if they actually get called out on any of this stuff at the reunion.
I'll be shocked, or someone will start to call them out and Nick and Vanessa will like change what they're talking about and they'll be like, okay, but like, they always make me so mad when they do that. They're holding someone accountable and they're trying to change it to like address somebody more or something. I'm like, shut up, we don't need you here.
You guys are ruining this for us.
So King Pate saying that this season fucking sucked.
It did.
I think it wasn't a good season for like the success, obviously. It wasn't a good season for the men. We did not send our best on this show.
Nope.
Most of the men on this season sucked and weren't good. Some of the women weren't great either.
No.
I do think from like a drama perspective,
the middle portion was really good.
There was good drama. Some of the... They fumbled one big thing that they fumbled, and maybe I can understand why. Hopefully we get more at the reunion. But Leo and Brittany not being like in Mexico was a huge fumble. I think that would have really spiced up the drama stuff. Well, let's be honest. I'll be honest about why I watch this show. I don't care about these couples falling in love. They ain't going to last that long. I don't really care. I love love, but this ain't the way to find it.
No,
I want to see just the messiest, like most insane people in the world. Yeah. And in this one, they had some of those people.
Steven, but I need them to not all be unlikable. That's the problem.
Yeah,
like, I can handle a messy person if they're, like, endearing. But, like Shake. You remember Shake? Shake was terrible. Shake was the one who, like, called everybody fat all the time and everything. Like, he was a horrible human. He was not enjoyable to watch because he was such a terrible person. I think that was a lot of the problem this season. Like, Hannah, once they got out of the pods, it was like, oh, God, please stop putting her on my screen. Like, I think that that was a lot of the issue.
Like, Steven was, I thought, good reality television because he wasn't super unlikable. He was just a complete freak show. And, like, I didn't, like...
He's at the reunion, by the way, and he looks more blacker. He looks more... He dressed like a black man.
I didn't find him like unlikable of like, oh, I just hate this guy. I found him just to be completely strange, but he was a messy person and just strange.
He just felt like a big
Hannah. Yeah. We talked about her last week. Yeah. We'll see what the reunion brings tomorrow.
They gotta have Leo and Brittany at the reunion.
Oh, they have Leo, to.
Leo was the star of the pods. Like, that is such the biggest fumble. That was, like, the first sign that the season was going off the rails was when they didn't put the star of the pods in Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah, they got to have – they 100% have to have them at the reunion. Maybe they turn it down. I don't know. But they have to. Because, he was the star of the – of the first batch of episodes and then some. Like, the whole pod was built around really him. Like, he was the standout in the pod because all the other couples were pretty coupled up quickly and there was not a whole lot of wavering with that. Oh, the wife is saying Leo and Brittany are at the reunion.
Good.
That's what I love to hear. Good news. That is good news to hear. I am looking forward to the reunion, and I've pretty much been looking forward to the reunion since the couples were dropping like flies. I was like, we just need to get to the reunion so people can call out Tyler and Hannah and Ramses.
Real quickly, I don't know if y'all heard me before I cut out. The wife said that Leo and Brittany are at the reunion.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was the thing. That was what disappointed me last week is it was just one episode and it was just the wedding episode. And I was like, oh, this sucks. Like, wait a second. One episode? This is all you're doing? This week, like, can we not get the reunion after this? I gotta wait a week for this nonsense. Bullshit.
Yeah,
right. The challenge, another episode of the challenge,
a good one, a good episode.
SP3, I'll throw it to you for the recap.
Yes, this was a very good episode of the challenge from like an all around standpoint, other than the elimination sucked. The elimination choice did kind of suck.
Yeah,
but as far as drama and like really setting the tone for the second half of the season, this was like one of the better episodes that I've seen from the main season of the challenge since maybe like Total Madness. Like, it's been that long since I've been this interested in a challenge season, and a lot of it comes down to this episode. So coming off the last elimination where Tori and Kylan won. Of course, we're now it's every man or woman for themselves. And really, they really set this to set the tone with this episode of they were establishing all the different alliances, because now it's all about the alliances instead of the eras. Because this was the first episode that they talked about the Bananas Angels, which is Bananas, Rachel, Laurel, Aviv, and Jenny. And I was like, man, I only like one of y'all. Why is I was like, Rachel, why are you in this group? I only like you in this group. Yep. But the Bananas Angels, we also got the LOLs, the Ladies of Leisure, which is Naya, Michelle, and Olivia. And I do appreciate this alliance because they are very self-aware that they all suck. They all suck.
They're like, and we're here to lounge by the pool. And
they literally call themselves just, we're here to, Ladies of Leisure, we're here to just chill. That's all we're here to do.
Then we got what's left of the Vacation Alliance with Tori and Josh. And basically they've adopted Jordan due to his familiar ties to Tori. I guess he's another brother of Tori's at this point. So that led into the daily. And I think this was one of the best dailies of the year because it felt like a mini final, because there was a massive amount of heat apparently from everybody that was saying it. And basically, it was they throw down like hundreds and hundreds of balls onto the field, and you have to grab two balls at a time and run it down the field and put it into your little section here. And when you make it to the top, then you'll be allowed to basically put together this 40 puzzle. So it was a lot of heat. It's a long run that they're doing back and forth because they can only take two balls at a time. And we were seeing the heat and the humidity of this whole challenge was really affecting the way people think in multiple different places. First with the ball section, like most notably Johnny Bananas putting two balls into Jordan's thing. You had Ryan do that for Laurel, of all people. He put two balls in Laurel's thing. And then at the beginning of the daily challenge, we were then informed that it's no longer men and women eliminations every week because they have to stretch out this challenge season for 20 episodes, unfortunately. So they are doing one man and one woman elimination. So they flipped the coin, and it was a men's day. So the women who were picked as targets are no longer targets. So it's just the men of Johnny, Derek, and Ryan. And they gave us another caveat where I was confused with the taking of the targets last week, because I was like, so somebody can come in last and then they're scot-free because they weren't picked out as a target. And TJ says no. Whoever comes in last, regardless of who's target, they go directly into the elimination. And then the winners of the challenge will pick between the targets to decide who goes in there with the last place person. So I was like, oh, that's great. That's awesome. Y'all fix the issue that I had with last week. So I appreciate that. So, yeah, it came down. Jordan was first for the men, basically helped by Johnny putting the two balls because he did one less lap than everybody else. He was able to put his puzzle together very quickly. No surprise there. What surprised me was Tori coming in first. And my God, I got to hand it to Tori. She made this look like this was not a big deal for her. She was barely sweating. Well, by the time she gets to the puzzle, she's barely sweating and she's putting it all together. You saw Carl was getting kind of gassed on the last couple of laps. Laurel was walking a bunch and stuff. So the women that you would put on the same level as Tori, she kind of made this look easy and got first place. Kara even coming in second place. As soon as she was done, she was like, Tori, I gotta give it to you. Damn, Tori. She was like, I gotta give it to you on that one because I'm gassed over here. So other people came in. I think Kylan came in second for the guys. So, but basically the people that were into power were Jordan and Tori. And then it came down to kind of the last place people. Michelle was really struggling in this one. Like, she finally puts her puzzle together and she basically passes out and she's like shaking and trembling. She's having like a panic attack and stuff. She needed medical attention. And if it wasn't for kind of Olivia, because she was having a lot of like self-doubt, talking about like, am I even supposed to be here? Am I anything without Devin and stuff like that? So she was going through it. If it wasn't for Olivia being there for her, it was a nice moment there with that. I think, yeah. So they were, I think Naya was last place for the women. So they said for the women who, you know, if you came in last place, you don't go into the elimination, but you will get a penalty on the next challenge. So I think she came in last. And then for the men, it came down to Derek and Ryan. Already the targets, and y'all about to be last place. So y'all fucking this all up. Yeah, like y'all couldn't even put it together. And Ryan was just
totally Ryan had it done. Backwards.
Ryan was doing it. So it was a 40, right?
Yeah. Yes.
It was the number 40. Okay. Ryan had the pieces backwards and upside down. So he was just putting together a black puzzle. And I think it was Kara was like, you did a hell of a job putting together a black puzzle, but unfortunately, that's not what TJ wanted. At that point, I was like, I mean, he put the puzzle together. I would just count it if I was the judge.
No, I'd be like, no, I wouldn't.
But oh, I would. He did it more difficult.
Put it together black than just like with the actual shape on it. Like,
he was still last, though. He was still last putting it together.
One time, just look at all the other ones.
And every time he'd step back, it was like he didn't figure out that everybody else was like, oh,
he didn't even like by accident see that there were white lines on the other side of another piece. Like, oh, maybe let me check that. Like, I feel like, again, by accident, he would have seen this.
You would think so.
That was an all-time fumble.
Oh my god!
But like I said, I thought the daily challenge was really good, among the best of the season. But the show really got interesting after the daily challenge because it was on Tori and Jordan to vote out of Bananas and Derek who was going to go into the elimination. And TJ also added the caveat that the person of the opposite sex is the tiebreaker. So no matter if the two in charge had different opinions on who should go in, the woman for the men would be the deciding factor. And that's what made a lot of like what we saw in the beginning of the season make a lot of sense, how people were basically getting alliances with like men were getting alliances with women were getting alliances with men, because I think they started to realize that it was always the men who would choose the women targets. It was the women who would choose the men targets. But now it's even a bigger factor because now the women get to decide who's going to go into the elimination for the men, and the men get to decide that for the women. So the whole Johnny versus Tori rivalry really took into high gear. And I love the fact that they kept putting in the Devin cardboard cutters.
Yeah.
And he's like, lick my ass, Bananas. He is haunting the challenge.
He's getting more screen time than Olivia, and she's still on the season.
That's very true. That's very true. So yeah, he basically, you basically had him doing this game for Tori. Bananas. I will give it to Bananas though. Him going into the deliberation and said, "Try me, motherfuckers. Try me." It was like, "I'm gonna beat Ryan. I don't care."
My favorite thing was that Jordan knew what was going to happen, and Jordan's like, just going to sit back and let Tori take all of this. Like, ultimately, it's her decision. Like, he's just sitting there letting her handle it all, and she handled it really well. Like, she really did.
And I love Jordan being like, it's no blood on me because the women are the deciding factor. And what can Bananas do to me? Because like we established,
throw men.
It's the people of the opposite sex that can screw you over.
Yeah, Bananas tried to still put some heat on Jordan because he's like, you know, this is on you too, Jordan. Jordan's like, yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, heard. Yeah. He's like, okay, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like drowning him out. He's just babbling like an incoherent drunk.
When they go upstairs to tell Bananas, and Bananas is like, Ryan, where you at, Ryan? Like, you know, what's going on here? And then Bananas throws his fit of like, oh, so you're playing Devin's game. You're playing Devin's game. Yeah. Is that what I'm hearing? Is that what you're doing over here? And then Jordan's like, you just got to let him peacock for a while. He's going to throw his fit. My favorite line was, and she's like, Bananas has played this game for a long time. That doesn't mean he plays it very maturely.
Yeah.
I was cackling so when Jordan said that.
Yeah. Jordan had good one-liners this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way that Tori and Rachel played the in between the deliberation and them eventually choosing Bananas, because, you know, Rachel has established she's got this alliance with the Bananas Angels. Kara got a lot of screen time because she's kind of the leader of the middle pack, the people that don't have an alliance. And I love the fact that she's in this middle pack, because we know eventually by the setup of this episode, she's going to have to pick a side here. She's either going to have to pick the Tori and Jordan side of things, or Bananas and Rachel with the Bananas Angels. So I would love it if she did join the Jordan and Tori side. That's why I'm preemptively rooting for that side now. So yeah. And I love the fact that, Rachel and Tori had the whole conversation, and, you know, she's saying like, you know, I might have to put him in, and Rachel used this into her advantage, where she was like, you know, you're closer to Jordan than I am. Can you get me, you know, smooth out with that relationship? And, you know, I'm close with Bananas. Maybe I can help you out with your relationship with Bananas. And they basically formed an unspoken alliance, if you will, Casey, in between them. And that led to Rachel and Jordan having a conversation where Jordan was like, yeah, Tori's gonna make this move, so, but don't feel like you're losing someone, you're gaining me. I would like to fill in that spot, because if Ryan loses, that's one person that never would vote for Rachel. If Bananas loses, that's someone that wouldn't vote for Rachel. So Jordan's like, I'll just swoop in to whoever leaves, I'll just swoop in into their spot, if you will. So I like the way that Rachel played that. And I love the way that Tori went to everybody, was like, I'm going to pick Bananas. Do you promise not to vote me in? Do you promise not to vote me in? Do you promise that I'm helping everybody out, because I'm getting rid of the 7-time, arguably the GOAT of the challenge. So I'm helping you, Corey. I'm helping you, Josh. And I love Jordan being like, yo, Tori played this masterfully. If you were going to go against Johnny Bananas, you need everybody else on your side. And that's what she did. That was perfectly done by Tori. This is the best political game that I've seen from Tori in a single episode.
I think Anissa not being there is helping Tori tremendously.
Yeah. Tori has been, she's, for the past couple episodes now, has really carried things and really stepped up, like, as a personality and just as a challenger overall. So good on Tori. We don't fully like Tori, but come around a little bit on her
when
it comes to this. And then we go down to
this episode.
Yeah. And then the elimination.
This was the part that kind of sucked.
The elimination, Bananas got picked, and they rode these, what do you even call these things? They weren't quads. Like fully ATVs.
It was like quads. Kids' quads.
Yeah. And they just had to ride around. They started on two opposite ends and they ran around a track, and you had to like catch up and grab the flag on the opponent. Ryan basically
Mario Kart.
Yeah, kind of like Mario Kart. Yeah. The best part was Nehemiah talking about like, I'm Mario Kart champion. Like, if I was in this, it would have been over.
Several records for Mario
Kart. Yeah, he's like, I got several records on Mario. I was like, what? Huh?
I did not know this. Go ahead, Nehemiah.
Yeah. Like, is this a thing?
Ryan hasn't driven.
Yeah, Ryan's like, I live in New York. I've driven like once in my whole life.
Yeah. He's like, I only drive when I go to New Jersey to see my mom. I've lived in New York since I was in my 20s. And so he's like, I don't drive. I've never driven an ATV. Like, yeah, this was not set up for him at all.
He was doing well on like the actual driving portion. It was then he ran into the just hay barrels. He ran into those on the first lap. So Bananas got the flag. And then the second lap, he was right there, but he couldn't grab it. And then he got stalled out and trying to do that. And then he just completely stalled out on like one of the corners. But like, he was actually like taking the corners well and doing well in the driving portion. He just couldn't maintain and ended up losing. And yeah, it was a pretty weak challenge.
It wasn't entertaining to watch.
It wasn't exciting. It wasn't entertaining. Yeah. It was like, all right, let's watch these guys kind of just go around in circles and do nothing for however long they're going to do nothing for. Like, it was just kind of, wasn't much of anything, but Bananas won. And then he got to, you know, pick the targets going forward. And of course, TJ says, you can pick anybody except the person who won the challenge.
And he was legitimately pissed. I'm like, I'm like, Kara, I'm like, what did you expect?
The winner? You've done a million seasons of this. You knew what it would be. But Tori being like, ha ha ha, motherfucker, eat my ass bananas. Eat my shit. I was dying. Like, she was losing it. Everybody else is dying laughing. Oh my god, that was so funny.
It was so good. Yeah, Tori was just fucking gloating so much. Like, you can't do shit about it. So could not do anything. And the Bananas picked his targets. He took shots at Michelle. Yeah. He's like, oh, since everybody's playing Devin's game, let me pick people who are going with Devin. But the biggest one was like Devin's future ex-girlfriend, Michelle. Is like, I thought you guys were like kind of sort of friends. What are you doing here? This seems mean.
But Naya with her Nini.
I get in this.
She said, now why am I in it? Like, she was so bad because she's like, God, because she'd already got last. She's already at a disadvantage. So it's like, dang it. And then Michelle was like, that was mean.
And Olivia was the other person who
he called her Devin's the snipers.
Yeah. So those are the three female targets up for next week, and we shall see what happens there. But let me pull up our draft board here. I feel like the chat had Ryan, or did Cher have Ryan?
I think the chat did. I think I have Derek.
Okay. There you go. Derek, I mean, it's one or the other, you know.
Yes, I think the chat only has Josh.
Josh.
Wow. The only down to Josh.
Now, Ryan is gone from the chat, so there we go. All right. I got a little concerned. You know, Banana was my first overall pick. I was like, this isn't like a great challenge. Like, this is a challenge where he could possibly win or lose based on like nonsense. Like, if he just screws up and runs into the hay barrel, like, fortunately Ryan did that. But I was like, this isn't it was a neutralizing challenge. It's like, you're just driving a quad. There's no real advantage. There's no physical advantage. There's no mental advantage. There's no puzzle advantage or anything. It's not even really an endurance advantage. It's just like, who can keep their focus long enough to drive this thing? It's like, so I was a little concerned when they were doing this, like, oh man, this is a kind of a neutral challenge that Bananas might lose. But fortunately, Ryan living in New York all his life cost him.
Poor Ryan.
All right, so the board has been updated. We'll be back next week reviewing the episode. We'll review Love is Blind reunion. We'll talk about that and all the messy drama that comes with that. SP3 and I will talk about the week and the NBA season as well. Cher Delaware, anything to plug?
No.
SP3, anything to plug?
Top three to bottom three next week in our hot takes for the NBA.
Hottest, not hot. Hottest. takes.
Hot takes. So check that out. You can follow me on the Twitter machine at TrueHillSP3 and join me and Romeo live at 12:05 p.m. Eastern time today over on the True Hill Heat YouTube channel. We'll be reviewing Monday Night Raw, aka the Bloodlines Monday Night Raw. So it was more entertaining than the last couple.
There you go, everybody. Go support everything SP3 is doing. We appreciate you, SP3. Thank you, as always. Share
Delaware. Oh, and check out SI.com for my 20 greatest WWE wrestlers of all time, because Becky Lynch seen my list, so y'all can't tell me nothing.
Thank you, as always, SP3. Thank you, Share Delaware. We'll be back next week. Bye, everybody.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.